It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I sit up like this, it basically looks like I'm being eaten by this. Do you think we're relatable?
No.
Me neither.
No. I mean, I'm definitely not. You could be, but I think you'd go a little bit beyond the pale also, just in a different way.
I feel like there's a pretty small number of reasons why people watch / listen to that's an editing mark. Take two. I feel like there are a very small handful of reasons why people watch or listen to podcasts. Based on what we have heard from our lovely listeners in the past, it appears primarily because we seem like people they want to hang out with, and listening to the podcast is like them hanging out with us. Which, yeah, I suppose I'm fine to hang around with if you only did it 1 hour a week. Like, that's, I think that's a level that most people could tolerate. Especially if you knew it was going to end at that point. But I feel like, I don't know. I've always been, like, ever since I was very little, I've been very proud of being weird. But earlier today, I was like, one side of that, though, is like, so being unique sort of by definition means nothing you say and do resonates with other people.
That's pretty much right, yeah.
I mean, another way to say unique would be to say alien. And, you know, like, most of the classic reasons people would listen don't apply. There's the, they learn useful things. I don't think anybody's ever learned anything from this. I certainly have learned nothing from this podcast. Because it's funny or entertaining. Now, I will say, I mean, I have to be fair here. I do believe we are on occasion funny for certain people. I think it is not fair to us to say like nothing we do is ever funny. I don't think we are consistently funny enough to warrant the people who are still listening after 600 and some episodes. And yeah, and then the other one is like, you know, you relate. It's like they're like me, and I don't think that's a thing. So like, what's left? I mean, there is the people want to see a car crash kind of deal, but again, that doesn't hold you for like, in all fairness to us, even if you do think of us as a car crash, and I think it's absolutely fair to think that, we're not an interesting enough one to hang around for 12 years. So, I don't know what it is. Did I tell you about the little beaver? Did we talk about the little beaver?
I don't think so.
That is adorable. So one day I'm picking up Trish from work, and we're driving home, and the traffic is slowing. And I'm like, what is going on here? And they're like, oh, is somebody turning? No, they didn't turn. They keep going. And like, there's a big gap. So I'm like, I don't know what this is about. And then I finally realized that people are all stopping, slowing at the same point where there appears to be nothing. And then they go on and they get back up to speed. It got closer. And there's something that I'm like, That's a big squirrel. But it's walking funny. And I'm like, oh no, is it injured? Is it a cat? What is happening? And Trish is absolutely bleeding heart for animals. So if there is a wounded animal, we're stopped, clearly. So we get closer and I'm like, do I need to pull over here? We get close enough and it's a beaver. Like, but little. Like, it's like the size of a cat.
Oh.
But when we get close enough, the tail is unmistakable. I mean, I guess it could have been a platypus. It didn't turn out to be a platypus. But it's a beaver. But it's so cute. And for a beaver, it was walking very normally. And that was the thing. The cars, it did not care. It was just sort of marching along. It was absolutely adorable. And I had never seen like a baby beaver. And I didn't know beavers were around here. I don't know what beavers' natural habitat is. I mean, North America. But are they like everywhere?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Because I mean, Oregon, in North America, the beaver like, state. I don't know if that? You do that. Oregon is the beaver state.
Oh.
What we are called. And also there is a beaver on our state flag.
Yeah, we have beaver in Iowa, sure.
Also.
Pretty much everywhere.
The state song of Oregon is Land of the Empire Builders. Which, ever since I learned that in like school or whatever, I've been very confused. I mean, it's a problematic song, don't get me wrong, but I'm also like, did Oregon specifically play a large part in American imperialism? Like, we're not, I do not think Oregon is the land of the empire builders any more than at least 47 other places.
Yeah, I suppose. Here. But I mean, I'm trying to think of why they would say that. I mean,
listen, you're not listening. Listen. Oh, now she stopped.
What?
Ezzy's hunting.
Hunting? Oh. And she makes noise when she hunts?
Well, her version of hunting is she grabs a ball or a toy in her mouth, and then she basically yells until she can show it to us and drop it, and then we're like, good job. But her favorite time to do it is after we've all gone to bed.
Oh.
And then she can't show us to it because we're in a dark bedroom and she's out in the hallway. But no, just now. And I assumed she was going to come in here, but she stopped. Probably because I yelled at you. So I still think it's your fault. I'm sorry, you were saying?
Well, I think the Astor family moved out there, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
A whole bunch of rich people might have moved out there. Maybe that's why they call it that.
The only thing I know about people moving to Oregon, specifically, other than everyone in that video game, is when I worked at the Grinnell Herald Register, I was credited in the paper. And somebody called up and they're like, are you related to us? Because your name is Parsons and our name is Parsons. And I was like, I don't think so. I'm not from here. And it turned out, I think I've talked about this before, the Parsons family, when heading out to Oregon, got as far as Nebraska and somebody essentially broke their leg. And so a chunk of the family connected to the broken leg victim stayed in Nebraska while the rest went on. So there's a bunch of Parsonses out here. And I know particularly Ladora, Iowa has a large number of Parsonses.
Mm.
So in theory, I'm really distantly related, but I'm not actually related.
That's interesting.
But it got confusing because I moved from the place where my family lives to a place where people with the same last name live, so they thought I might be their friend.
You knew? Did you know that there's an Oregon connection to the Black Angel in the cemetery?
Yes, you've talked about it on here.
Oh yeah.
And they schlepped the body back here just for them.
Yeah.
Eugene,
Oregon. They were in Eugene.
Eugene's a good town. For some reason this week, there was a Simpsons episode, but not a Bob's Burgers or a Great North. I don't know what that was about. But in the Simpsons episode, it involved the Simpsons episode. The Simpsons nowadays are very big on taking a social trend that has reached peak saturation like 2 years ago, and then they do an episode about it. So they did an episode that was basically about Roblox. And there was a point where Principal Skinner comes into the computer lab and he's like, "What's going on? Why aren't these kids in school?" I do a terrible Skinner. And Bart says, "They're all playing Oregon Trail and not having any fun." And then Skinner looks around and says, "I don't see any cows with dysentery here. You're not playing Oregon Trail." Did you ever play Oregon Trail?
I'm trying to think. I knew a lot of people who did.
We have talked about it on the podcast because the goal you got to was literally where I lived. And so I always thought that was very cool.
Right. And it seems like there were a couple times where I had the opportunity to sit down and like start a game or something, but I didn't finish it. Or you died of cholera. Here's another possibility. I think there were some games that were ripoffs of it.
Oh yeah, Oregon Trail was the big one, which I believe is a zombie themed version.
Well, no, this was basically the same game, maybe a different name or something.
Oh.
Same concept. All of it was the same. It just was a different name or something.
Oh, okay. There have been parodies since then.
Oh, okay. No, this wasn't a parody. This was something that came out while Oregon Trail was still popular and everything. And you could get it like, because we had a Texas Instruments home computer, right?
Oh, and nice. And
you could get cartridges. You could get game cartridges for that, but you could also play games. You could install games off of a cassette tape.
Ah.
And sometimes you could get
bootleg
games or games like that were what do you call it? You know, just ripoff versions of other games, and you could install them on there with your cassette.
Yeah, just a knockoff or whatever. Yeah.
Knockoff, that's what I meant to say. And of course, back then, they didn't sell computer monitors because you just hooked it up to a television. I mean, it could be your television that you usually use, but you could purchase a television and dedicate it to the computer use. I don't know when they started like actually selling computer monitors.
So I'm not that old. I had a computer monitor. I even had an internal hard drive that was a whopping 20 megs, I believe. But I am old enough that all we had was the 5 1/4 floppy drive. And there was a computer store that would rent video games that were on 5 1/4 floppy drives. Mm. And DRM didn't exist back then. So I would rent it, copy it, return it, and have it.
Of course.
And a lot of photocopying of manuals, because that was the early anti-piracy thing, is the game would make you look up something in the manual. And so you had to photocopy the manual, but that was still cheaper than buying the game. And then you'd be set. And so then the way to deal with that is some of the games had secret messages. Do you remember the old thing where if you had like a red filter, you could see things? They basically would put something like that in there, and so you would need a red gel to see it. And not only did you then need two components, but if you did a black and white photocopy, it was no good. So that's I'm also old, but not as old as you, because we did still. Well, I think my daycare had a computer that hooked up to the TV.
Yeah, because
when it basically looked like an Atari 2600, except the big flat spot of the Atari 2600 that did nothing and looked like it was supposed to rest your drinks on was a keyboard.
Mm.
But it was like a keyboard and then like a video game cartridge spot. And I think that was it.
Yeah, that cartridge thing, when they came up with that really home computing kind of exploded after that. And then there was a video game crash. Like, I don't remember what year that was supposed to be.
80s, late 80s, I think, due to saturation and poor quality of knockoffs.
But by the time you had that computer you were just talking about, I had a computer with a monitor and about, I think the first PC I bought, you know, I wasn't just using, because so when I went to college, I had a word processor, and it, you know, it had its own screen and it used its own type of storage disks. Like, they were not standard. And if I wanted to use the internet, I had to go to a library or something like that and use a monitor that was hooked up to the university mainframes and all that. So the first time I bought a PC, I was out of college I'd just been out of college a little while. And it was, I think it had 60 meg actually. So it was pretty big for that time. That would have been 1991 or 92.
Yeah, we would have gotten ours in the late 80s. And you didn't even say PC back then. Mm. You specifically said AT clone, because it was essentially the same as an IBM AT machine.
Yeah, or IBM compatible. That's the way what they called it.
Earlier. Also was, yeah, a common one. By the time I got to college, we mostly had Macs, but they were the old boxy Macs. And then I don't know that they were like the original. I don't know there was like a Mac Plus, but it was old. And some places on campus still had dumb terminals related to email and stuff like that.
Right.
Yep. We're old. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world where the two of us work out our existential crises and throw it up on the internet, which makes us just like every other podcast and really anything anyone does on the internet. But this is the only place where we do it.
Yeah.
I'm Tony.
And I'm Liam, and this is episode 612.
Now, I know that you paused before you said, and I'm William, to remember the episode number. But because you paused before you said, and I'm William, it sounds like you had to pause to remember your name.
It's not really, I don't pause to remember my name. I pause to check myself to say, are you just going to say your name and the episode number? Or are you going to say something else? And then I decide, no, I'm just going to say my name and the episode number. I almost never say something else. Sometimes
612
I do.
Times.
No, sometimes I say something different.
I don't think so.
Sure.
That doesn't sound right. Maybe you used to do that on Grape Shot or whatever.
No. I've said something different on this podcast.
For those of you just joining us for the first time, it's not going to get better. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people who need people, write into that email address, whatever they want. And the hat makes us read them, talk about them. That's it. But it doesn't always try very hard, because sometimes we don't. Yeah. So, how's your week? Are you done yet with this term or semester or quadvember or whatever?
They're quarters. They're 10-week
quarters. Are you done with your two bits? It's got to be soon, right?
Week from tomorrow. And then 3 weeks, and then I'm back at it. And I've got a year and a half to go.
Yeah, no, that's... But at least you'll get 3 weeks off.
Well, you know, I talked about this quarter having an abnormal psych class in it. And so I'm almost done with that. It's been very interesting. Like I said before, you know, when you're...
When are you going to take normal psych?
when you're a physician and when you're a police officer, you don't want bad things to happen, but you know they're going to happen. And so, you know, you need to know about those things, and classes around that type of thing holds a special interest. And so, you know, abnormal psych is that kind of thing for me.
But as a therapist, you do want those things because it's more money.
No, I'd sooner not have a job than have people be mentally ill, but they will get mentally ill and they do need help. So yes, this class carries special interest for that, an interest that the other classes, you know, don't bring with it. Kind of like the crisis class is the same. You know, you don't want crisis to happen, but they probably will, and you want to be able to help people. So classes like that carry a special interest. And yeah, this class has been really interesting, really a good class, I think. I've really enjoyed the text and the, you know, I don't typically like the assignments that we have because I don't often think they're very, well, anyway, I don't often like them, but these assignments have been okay. I felt like I get a lot out of doing them, and I've gotten good grades on them and stuff. So it's been a good class. And I know I talked a lot about it when I was starting, and I had a lot of high expectations for it. And I just, now that it's nearly done, I can say that those expectations were, you know, met or exceeded, because it was a really interesting class. And I have no diagnosis for you, so
no. I don't know if that's
good or bad.
Because I'm special. I have Tony syndrome, and it's very different than all the rest of them. Are you not going to say hi to Gus?
Oh, hey Gus! I didn't even really notice there. I was too busy thinking about what I was trying to say.
The whole, I'd rather not have a job than have people have whatever the fuck you said.
Mental illness.
Yeah. I encountered a thing the other day on Twitter, weirdly. I still check it each day just to check for notifications and stuff. It's not a fun place right now. Go figure. a lot of people have fled. But I saw a thing just briefly that made me think of you, because I assume you would have a similar reaction to me. Somebody asked in a tweet, when you die, vis-a-vis, this is about global climate change.
Okay.
So at your death, would you rather have the global temperature has gone up 2 degrees centigrade, like in your lifetime, or the global temperature has gone up 2.1 degrees centigrade, but the people largely responsible for it are brought to justice? And I was like, how is this a question? Or is this one of those things? Is this one of those things where if you give a certain answer, it's like the funeral thing. If you give a certain answer, you're clearly a sociopath. Because I'm like, no. I mean, don't get me wrong. Those people being brought to justice sounds good. I'm not willing to further destroy the planet to prove that point. Like, it was such a bizarre question to me. I suppose an argument could be made that if they are brought to justice, there is an implication that perhaps it will stop increasing from that point, but I don't think that's true. Like, if all the richest corporations right now all got in trouble, which wouldn't happen anyway, but other ones would just come in and take their fucking place at this point. So, but I thought that was so weird a thing to ask.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense to me, but not much does, so I don't really count that as anything.
So, other than your abnormality, how's your week been?
It's just been school. That's all I've really been doing.
Really? You haven't been watching nothing?
Well, remember, the last time I had so many things to talk about because I, like, by some miracle, I had enough work done ahead of time. I could take 4 whole days off and just watch stuff.
Watch 7 Tremors movies.
Yeah, that was then. This is now. Now I have stuff to do, and I don't know. We've been watching things, but nothing really to talk about. Mm-hmm. What about you?
I've been watching things. It's been weird. We are watching Wednesday.
Oh.
We are three episodes in. It's starting to grow on me, I'll be honest. Up until this third episode, I was like, this show is really lucky that I have been watching a lot of stuff that I have hated recently. And it's benefiting from the comparison. Because we watched the first episode and I was like, you know what? I don't know that I like this show, but I find it relatively inoffensive and somewhat interesting. So sure, let's do it. Now I'm actually, it's creeping in. I'm like, I kind of like it. It still has, it has some teen angst. There's a lot less teen angst than you might think, which is good. And it also still has a little bit of the one thing I really hate about the Adam thing.
What's that?
Pugsley. No. So the premise of the Addams Family is that they are creepy, kooky, mysterious, spooky. Like, they're goth, morbid, you know, dark, spooky shit. Which I get, and I'm here for it. I like the idea. It's cool. But sometimes, and this was true in the original show that I used to watch. I think this is true in the more recent movies and stuff. Sometimes writers translate that as they're really into just the opposite of what anybody normally would be into. And sometimes that dovetails. Sometimes it's like people like pretty nice stuff and Adam's Family like scary, dark stuff. Fine. Sometimes it's like people like to not be sad or in physical pain or be tormented. And like sometimes it's just very arbitrary where the Adam's Family are like, I feel the opposite of how people would feel, even though like there's a bit in the first one where somebody accuses somebody else of not having a heart. And they're like, oh, you always know the sweetest things to say. I'm like, that's not. No, they're calling you a shithead. And you know that's what that means. It's not a play on an actual, like, they're missing the organ. It's very much not that. Right. It's just you are heartless. You have no sympathy or you're a sociopath. And they're like, oh, that's so sweet. I'm like, no, that's not. And the Addams Family has a fair bit of that. And I've always I hate it. And I think it's lazy writing.
Yeah, also. I agree.
But it is showing up in bits and pieces here. But again, not too much. Weirdly, I feel like the actor playing Wednesday is getting better, or maybe just the writing is getting better. There was a very, and this is a Wednesday thing, a very non-emotional, borderline robotic vibe. And like we've hit the third episode and she's starting to be like sarcastic in interesting ways and things like that. And so I'm getting more into it. And like, I'm also really impressed with a lot of the performances. There are even characters that like annoy me, but I'm super like the roommate's annoying as fuck. I am super impressed with that actor's ability to play that character because she is on. She never like, it is a very consistent character in a way that I'm like, I don't think I could cope with doing that. Like it's really amazing. And the whole thing's a mystery and it's not a bad mystery. And I'm digging that. Also, Gwendolyn Christie. This is just I know I could never watch Game of Thrones, but outside of that kind of thing, I think I just got to follow her around. When she's in something, I just got to watch it because she's amazing. And she, and not the same every time. Different. Mm-hmm. She has range, but it's always just riveting.
Yep, she's good.
I love that.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm starting to get into it. It doesn't help that I've had a bad run of ones I had to bail on. A while back, we tried to watch, actually, and it's all Apple TV. We tried to watch Bad Sisters, which is a Irish thing created and starring Sharon Horgan, who is a comedian and writer that I like. And it's all about this group of sisters who one of them is married to a real shithead and the others conspire and kill him. And the show is after that, you know, trying to deal with the cover up and things like that. And it's meant to be a comedy drama. And the trailer made it look kind of entertaining. And check it out. And then start watching it. It is not very comedic. Mm. It is quite dark. And I didn't. So I gave it 2 episodes and then I was out. And then we found a real neat one called Slow Horses. Did you check this one out?
No, I've heard of it, though.
Yes. It sounds wonderful. And it looks wonderful. It's basically the story of an office in London that is where all the MI5 agents who fucked up real bad, but not quite bad enough to get fired, get sent to do like busy work or bullshit work or things like that. And it is headed by Gary Oldman.
Mm.
And it also had Olivia Cooke in it, who I'm developing an obsession for. And so it looked at it, and it has Kristen Scott Thomas as basically the head of MI5 proper. And so it looked really good, and it is really good quality. Great performances, great production. It's directed well, the whole, it's vile. It's a show about terrible, shitty people thwarting slightly terrible or shittier people. To the degree that the second episode was leaps and bounds better than the first episode, and I still was like, I am done. But I was sad about that. And of course, let's not forget the prom queen, the woman of the hour. Last night we finished She-Hulk.
Mm.
And I cannot tell you how happy I am to have that in my rearview mirror.
Mm.
I don't. Also, I am confident you did skip more than one episode because the penultimate episode ends on such a bombshell that I don't think you would be like, yeah, we don't need to go back to it. Although it also made me really mad.
Mm.
I will say this. The final episode of She-Hulk is special. It does something that essentially hasn't happened before. Certainly not on Disney Plus. I mean, I'm sure you could find an example somewhere, but like it took a left hard in an interesting way that was actually even kind of amusing. But by then I was just very, I don't know. It's hard for me to fully explain, but I just didn't. I enjoyed exactly one episode of She-Hulk. And I hated like 4 of them. Like angry hated.
Mm.
And there's only 9 episodes total. So everybody does, like, it's not the fault of anybody acting on the show. They all do a great job, but no. So Wednesday seems cool.
Well, I hope you continue to think that.
I should tell you. There are some movies that have come to streaming services that I'm excited about that I didn't know were gonna show up already.
Mm.
Bullet Train is on Netflix.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, shit, if I'd known like 3 weeks later it was going to be there, we wouldn't have spent money to rent it. But so I talked about that before. I recommend that to anybody who thinks that kind of thing could be their thing. And it's great. It's a great time. This movie called Troll is on Netflix that I saw the trailer for a little while back. And I was really nervous because it's Norwegian, and Norwegians made a movie called Troll Hunter a while back that Trish and I hated. But this basically looks like Norwegian Godzilla, and I don't like the Godzilla movies, but for some reason, like, I want to see this. So that's out there.
Well, we saw Troll after. So Abby had seen Troll Hunter before. So yes. We watched that first.
Okay.
And then we watched.
Are Troll. They related? They're not related, right?
No.
Okay.
I mean, they don't really contradict each other or anything like that. I mean, if you wanted to, you could think they were.
Well, Scandinavia is full of like canonic supernatural lore. Like there are places in Scandinavia where you can get degrees in elves and shit. I'm not even making that up. So like.
Why didn't you like Troll Hunter?
I think we were just bored as shit. I don't know. It was many years ago, but we were excited to watch it. And we watched it. And we were like, that sucked.
Mm.
Like didn't make us mad or anything, but we were just like, that's, I would love to have had that time to do something else with my life.
But it's like a found footage thing. And yeah. I don't usually even like then. Found footage things. I mean, I like the idea of found footage things, but they almost never are as good as you think they should be. I thought it was okay. But I don't know. So we watched that first, and then we watched
Troll.
Yeah. And you know, I think Abby gets more out of that stuff than I do. But I mean, I thought it was all right. I thought both of them were all right. Actually, I don't have a problem with either one.
I'm not sure why I want to see Troll. Because again, it looked like Norwegian Godzilla. And I'm like, I'm not interested in kaiju movies.
It kind of is that.
I don't know why. The fact that it's Norwegian, I think, does some of it. And don't get it twisted. It's probably going to be one of those where I'm like, let's pop a couple weed gummies and then watch it. Because it doesn't strike me as a movie that I'm going to get a lot out of. But it looks entertaining.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone getting a lot out of it.
No, it's not. That's not what it's for. Yeah. No. I think I like the idea of giving another country a chance at something like this. That helps. I'm like, it's not. I mean, I'm sure it's financed by the same sort of people, but I'm just like, yeah, Norway gets into it. And on HBO Max, and I'm super psyched for this. I did not realize it was showing up this soon. Amsterdam, like, just dropped yesterday.
I don't think I know what that is.
It's Christian Bale and Margot Robbie and some other big name. And it's like, we saw the trailer for it. It's essentially like a comedy heist movie that may or may not be based slightly on real life stuff, okay. But it's got an absolute amazing pedigree of actors in it. And it just looks real fun. Chris Rock's in there. Mike Myers is in there for some reason, just a bunch of people, and it looks real cool. And we've been seeing trailers for a while. I didn't realize it was so soon, but last night I was looking for something to watch, and it's out there. I'm like, holy shit! So I'm excited about that. I have actually seen some movies though that I want to talk about very quickly. I want to talk about last night after I put Trish to bed, I finally watched the second Hellraiser movie. Of the original, the actual Hellraiser 2, which by and large people talk about as the best Hellraiser film. Like people who like Hellraiser films are like, 2 was where it peaked. 1, proof of concept, great. 2 was where it peaked. 3 was okay. Since then it has sucked until the newest one, which people say is probably the second best one, or people who like it. So I was a little bit excited, and it is, unlike some of the others, it is a continuation of the previous story. In fact, I would say it takes place like a few hours after the end of the first one. And I enjoyed watching it. It doesn't explain why anybody does anything in very weird ways. Like, I can't explain it without getting into details that I don't want to spoil, but like there's just people do things. And I'm like, I constantly had the feeling that people were having conversations in between scenes that I missed that were kind of critical. And so that was weird, but visually it's absolutely stunning. And again, old school. So it's got plenty of gore and stuff. It's a Hellraiser movie, but all sorts of weird, creepy, dark sci-fi effects and things like that. And all practical. because it's old enough that it had to be. And so that's kind of neat. It was a fun time and it was a fun watch, but it was confusing. And it doesn't strike me as like one of the all time greats. I think I liked the new one better than I like this. But
what's the world building premise behind Hellraiser movies and whatever?
Weirdly, it gets a little bit spoilery, but well, it's based off of Clive Barker novella.
Okay.
Is the original thing. But the basic premise is the concept of the Cenobites. And the Cenobites are beings from, depending on how we get metaphysically murky here, but they are from another dimension. And that dimension is called hell. And maybe is actually hell. And that dimension is ruled over by a god named Leviathan.
Mm.
And the Cenobites are Leviathan's foot soldiers, essentially. And they're all like mutilated slash in a lot of bondage and leather gear and stuff. But the whole thing is the goal of everybody there is essentially to explore sensation and the extremities of sensation. And so there's a or sometimes multiple puzzle box that exists in our world, and people in the know who have like done the craziest shit and they're like out of things that thrill them will seek this box out. And if you solve it, the Cenobites will come and they will introduce you to a whole new world of sensation. The problem being, the Cenobites don't really make a distinction between pain and pleasure, because at the extreme ends, they feel that they're essentially the same thing. So to them, you invite them in and they bring you and they introduce you to a whole new world of sensation. To you, you solve the puzzle and you invite them in and they torture you for eternity in the most horrific ways you can imagine. And part of what makes it a series of movies is sometimes people who didn't know any better accidentally solve the puzzle box. And then hijinks ensue and you have to try and outwit them or make deals with them or, you know, offer them somebody else. Or I mean, the rules change because it's a long running series, but that kind of stuff. So but that's basically what we're dealing
with. By another dimension, you mean like a parallel universe or something? Or like,
yes, it's really just a place that's full of creepy brick alleyways and weird labyrinths and shit, and occasionally set pieces that are like things from your childhood, but gross and scary, you know. But yes, it's essentially a parallel universe, but it's probably a small one.
Mm.
Yeah, and in some cases, it's called hell. And technically speaking, the face of the series is a character known as the Hell Priest, because he's like the chief Cenobite. But everybody knows him as Pinhead because his particular fucked upness is that he's got basically nails jabbed into his head all over. But that's part of it, because the Cenobites are there are specific ones and that you see repeatedly and so forth. So they've been given, there's the Chatterer, who's one that like their lips are pulled back and their teeth are always doing this and stuff. And, just all sorts of different things.
Cenobites. Where did he get that? I mean,
I don't know.
Is it spelled with a C or at the beginning or an S?
C. 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 Cenobites.
Hmm. Interesting.
And that's the thing. I don't know that I'm, because mostly they're just an excuse for some real creative gore and shit, which I don't really care about. I mean, sometimes I get into that stuff, but not in general. I don't seek that out. That's why I don't want to see the Saw movies. I'm sure they're full of that shit, but I don't fucking care because the story's dumb as hell. And that's the thing, is I'm not interested in the gore. I find the lore fascinating. I love this idea.
Yeah, that is interesting.
And ways that it gets played with and things. And you know, there you learn other truths about it, and four movies later those get contradicted and whatever, but like their thing, like the fourth movie you find out that the puzzle box was actually made by humans at the behest of the Cenobites, and like it travels down the family. And I think that movie is like in three different time periods that you keep going back and forth from, where different generations are dealing with it. And one's like in the future in space and they're like, whatever. But so lots of little bits. And in fact, around movie five, I think we basically stopped doing the story. And it was basically like a really gross, creepy Twilight Zone. So you'd have people who are like horrible shits, and then they get a puzzle box and they solve it, and then bad, gross stuff happens to them, and then Pinhead shows up and is like at that point it also became distinctly like you're being judged for being horrible. Whereas before it wasn't that. In fact, originally it was much more a sniff of like the people, this is only an issue for people who seek us out. But yeah, so the concept I find really fascinating. And it, like, I keep thinking I should read the Clive Barker books. Also, it went on, there have been comics about it and things. There's been a bunch of stuff. It has really been a whole multimedia enterprise over the years. But that's not what I want to talk about. As you recall, I said very briefly, not so much. We watched a movie called A Wounded Fawn that was on Shudder. My interest in this movie largely stemmed from the fact that the male lead in it is an actor by the name of Josh Rubin, who I know because he spent many, many years and actually still shows up and does things with College Humor and Dropout. And he did like a whole bunch of comedic improv and stuff like that. And he still shows up in a lot of that stuff. And I like him. I had seen him in a different horror movie called Scare Me. That's a horror comedy thing that I also really enjoyed. So I'm very curious about this, but the draw for my wife is it's by the same director who did Jacob's Wife that I talked about a little while back. Barbara Niven, and she's a preacher's wife, and she becomes a vampire, and the whole thing's an allegory for it's a feminist allegory. And so was this. And in fact, I looked up this director, and he did a different movie called Girl on the Third Floor, which I may or may not have seen, which I also think this is what this guy does, and he does it incredibly well for being a dude. Like, he gets it. And that, like, Wounded Fun, I really liked it. Trish fucking loved it. Which is a similar thing that happened with Jacob's Wife. We both liked it, but she liked it a lot more. I don't know, he's got a sense. And they're horror movies. They're just straight up horror movies. But it's like a Jordan Peele thing where, like, you can absolutely tell what they're talking about and what they're doing. And it's usually about terrible men and things like that. But it says things that are really impressive. They all also have a little bit of a sort of a comedy line through them, but not too much. And it's really cool. We finished watching it, and Trish is like, how does this guy know so much about misogyny? And it's not, I don't want people thinking it's a whole bunch of watching terrible things happen to women kind of, but like, no, it's very clearly talking about it. And the movie itself has essentially a dialogue. I mean, don't get it wrong. Like, most of the movies involve shitty dudes, but to be fair, most movies do. And this one, especially, the filmmaking is amazing in it, and it's very clearly a fairly low budget, and they do some very simple effects that, like, you can tell it almost reminds me of stage effects. There are things they do with, like, people behind sheets where you're like, that's clearly just a sheet and somebody's behind it, but to amazing effect. And he's very serious about it. There's a really long shot that we watched the whole credits, because this shot happens at the end, and it turns out the whole movie was shot on film. And for this end bit, they were like, we're just gonna let an entire reel run and you guys just keep doing what you're doing. And a reel apparently is 16 minutes long, which the credits were not that long. And it's good. It's intense. This one also is very strongly the story of a Greek tragedy. Like it's a present day thing, but it's constant references and stuff. And the tale itself is sort of like that, which I think is great because most Greek tragedies are man is horribly misogynist and has too much hubris and pays the price for it. So I'm like, this story literally is a Greek tragedy. Really cool mask work and things. The special effects, I mean, like the makeup effects and stuff, amazing. This one plays a lot with whose perspective are you following, and because there's a lot of like what really happened and what didn't. But I would strongly recommend it to someone. It is a dark horror film, but like, you know how I can't handle certain shit like that. I was fine here. And it's really impressive, and I think it steps it up, but I'm really fascinated by this guy. I really need to look up his name. It's Travis something, who's the director on these and most often the writer. And he did a really good job. Come on. Oh, I assumed I'd have it saved. I don't. All right, fine. So, well, this is good podcast. Here we go. Loading. Pardon me. It's loading. It's still loading. Oh, come on. Come on. Travis Stevens. Wow. That is a boring ass name. Travis Stevens with an S on the end. I would recommend his stuff. I've been really impressed, but this especially, I think you would appreciate the film craft if nothing else, but I also think you would appreciate other things about it.
Right.
And some real good performances. Yeah. So there. I also watched another movie that I don't think I'm going to talk about. I liked it, but it's a kind of movie that I'm like, I might be the only person who it seems like it's built for several aspects of my viewing personality, such that I wouldn't know who to recommend it to. Certainly not you. And I also got confused because it appears that it's a remake or maybe just a reissue of a movie from 11 years earlier. Also, there's a Backstreet Boy in it, which shocked me because it's not a movie you would have a Backstreet Boy in. And it's not one of the Backstreet Boys you could name. It's a different one. I'm just going to throw this out there in case anybody's obsessed with me and wants to know what I know. Is a 2022 movie, or maybe 2021, called Sex, Lies, and Sugar. And you can see it on Tubi. And I don't recommend it to anybody, but I liked it. It's weird. I found it very interesting. I've been thinking about it a lot since, which is always a good sign. Yeah. I think that's about it. I totally forgot to get my tablet out, so why don't you read a thing?
Okay. So this is from Azure Talon.
I've heard of him.
Dear,
he wears a scally cap.
I have no idea what this word is. Dear Therapirenos?
Therapirenos.
Therapirenos? What's that?
That's what I would assume Ned Flanders calls therapists.
Oh. Anyway. What do you call the inclination to assume others don't value you? Not self-esteem, but misunderstanding and underestimating the esteem others hold you in. Does that even have a name like social dimorphism or something. Azure Talon asking for a friend. That's funny.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, I'm simultaneously very concerned and getting a tremendous sense of power, because what I'm getting from this is Azure Talon comes to us for his mental health needs, which is a terrible idea, but also I love it. Also, I think you were going for social dysphoria, maybe? Social dimorphism would mean there are two different types of social.
I mean, I wonder if I read that wrong. I don't know. I've already closed it, but, so I can't say.
But also, that might have been an example. I mean,
reading it wrong.
I know what he's talking about.
Oh, I do too, because I think I suffer from this because years ago, this was really long ago, because I remember us talking about this while we were at your house and we were recording next to the air conditioner. That's how far back it was. But I was trying to explain that I didn't feel like I had low self-esteem, because to me, low self-esteem meant you value yourself less or you think you're worth less than other people, which I don't think. And I was trying to explain except that I...
You 100% do.
No, I don't think I do. Not...
You absolutely value yourself less than literally every other human being.
I treat myself worse than I do other human beings because I don't like myself as much. But I don't think I'm worth less than they are. I don't think they're worth more than I am or any of that. I just don't happen to like myself very much. And so when I interact with myself, when I deal with myself, interact with myself or project thoughts or feelings toward myself, they're more negative than I interact with other people, because I like other people more than I like me. But I also,
including people that you have only just met and have said like three words to you,
or either that I don't know, or, and some people even that I don't know, but they're also maybe infamous. Maybe they've done terrible things, but I have higher.
Yeah.
I like them better than I like myself.
I don't see value in debating this, but I do want to say next time you see your therapist, you explain that distinction to her. And see what happens.
But this thing that he's saying is interesting. I never really thought about it like that before, but I noticed this too, where again, I don't feel like I have a particular issue with my personal value, like in the world, but I do tend to think that other people don't value me.
It feels like a variation of imposter syndrome.
I mean,
but whereas that is, I'm not worthy of whatever privileges I've been given. It's a little, but I guess it's not, because again, it's not your sense of your worth. It's your sense of other people's worth, or your sense of other people's view of your worth.
Right. And I think it's a better way of it, because again, when I tried to explain it before, it was, it's not that I don't value myself, it's that I don't like myself. Yeah.
Again, that's, be sure to tell your therapist about this. I'm real curious.
I think that's a fair distinction, but
I think you are splitting some really impressive hairs here.
No, I think it's a fair distinction, but I think this,
well, that's why I'm asking you to discuss it with a professional, because I don't know.
I think this explains it better. Because there's a reason, like, I don't just arbitrarily not like myself. There's a reason. And it's because I don't feel like, this is how it breaks down. The reason that I give everybody else a pass that I don't give myself is because in every person I know or know of, I can see something in what they bring to the world that I value.
Even if it's somebody you don't know.
Right. Even if it's somebody I don't know.
All right.
But I can't see anything that I bring into the world that anybody can value. And if they don't value it, I don't, because I don't, I mean, I'm not going to value something in myself just for my own sake. Other people have to value it for it to have value. I mean, if it entertains me, who cares? Right. It's like, I mean, I can, you know, I'm the kind of person that I don't really get bored. If I'm by myself, I can entertain myself and that's fine. But that doesn't mean that I'm entertaining. It just means I can entertain myself. I'm only entertaining if I can entertain somebody else. Or
agreed, you know, but there are many types of value besides entertainment.
No, I know, but that I'm just using that as an example. I there are a lot of things that I can do that are adequate for me personally. But you know, I want to feel like I'm doing something that's making the world a better place. And I just don't feel like I've ever done anything like that. So
but you do feel like people who you don't know definitely are.
I see value in something about them. And so then I think, okay, well, they're fine. they're doing something.
Yeah. What has to happen for you to like a hypothetical person right now? Let's say the person who lives four houses down from me. I don't know anything about them, but there is a human being in that building.
Sure.
You see a value in them right now that you don't see in yourself?
Well, I mean,
the only thing you know about them at this point is that they are a human being living in Iowa City.
I've never seen them before.
No, that's what I'm saying. All you know about them is that they're a human being living in Iowa City.
Okay, well, all right. So, yes, naturally, I make certain assumptions, and I pretty much give everybody the benefit of the doubt.
But not you.
Because I know me. I mean, I know what my life experience is, and I think I know what impact I have on other people.
All right, let me come at it from a different direction.
That's different.
Can you envision a hypothetical person who you would like less than yourself? Like, can you put together a combination of actions and personality traits to form a conglomerate that you're like, yeah, that person sucks more than me?
Well, I mean, in theory, but I don't think I would feel like I can know a person well enough that would be a fair comparison, right? Like,
but
I know
you
myself.
Do acknowledge the statistical possibility that there exist people in the world that if you got to know them, you would like them less than yourself.
The theoretical possibility. I don't know.
But you seem very skeptical.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm skeptical or if I just haven't. I mean, this is a new idea, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't like to commit to an idea until I've really thought about it. So I don't know for sure. But yeah, I think what Azurtown's talking about is a better way to describe it. It's you know, I put a lot of premium on, you know, having some kind of positive effect. And it's not, another thing about that though, is that it's not that, like, there have been situations where I felt like I did have a positive effect in something. And like, I knew it based on certain data that was not feedback from any person. Like the person, nobody came to me and said, oh, this, you did a wonderful thing here or anything like that. And that was fine. It's not that I need some kind of affirmation from a person or another person, but unfortunately, oftentimes for you to know if what you're doing has any effect at all, much less a positive one, it does require someone to actually say something. I don't really require that. I know that for a fact, because there's been many times where I felt perfectly satisfied with the situation and the person didn't even seem to know that I had anything to do with it. Great. I just need to know. But unfortunately, you do often need to have someone say something. And the fact of the matter is, people aren't really good at giving feedback. I've found they're very bad at giving it at all, or they'll tend to give negative feedback and not positive feedback. So you don't really know what impact you're having, except a negative one. So
I've been toying with the idea recently that some of my more current mental health issues might stem from me needing / wanting more external validation. Because I used to get it all the time when I had a job. Because, I mean, to be fair, with basically one exception, most of my bosses and coworkers in my various jobs have thought I was pretty good at those jobs.
Yeah, well, you are good at your jobs, at least as far as
And I've also been very lucky in the bulk of my working years of having a lot of bosses who are very open and honest about positive feedback. Probably starting with you and going forward, but I've had great, including some who listen to this podcast now, who have been very big on like, you did a good job. And now I don't have that. I mean, there are variations I get from Trish, but it's not the same. And also there's nothing formalized, I guess, is the thing. Like that was always a component. And even just to the degree that getting a paycheck to me was a form of external validation. They're saying, we're willing to give you money for what it is you're doing. And so even if they didn't say it, I'd be like, they're paying me. I can't suck that bad. And now there's not that. I'm wondering if that's the thing. And I'm wondering if the answer is I need to learn better to live without external validation, or if it's at a point now where it's I need to find a source of that in the world, in my life. Because I do think as social creatures, that's a thing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a kind of problem where a person has an excessive need, you know, for this. But I think there's clearly a normal range where, yeah, it's perfectly reasonable. We're human. We're social beings. We need feedback of all kinds. And if we're not getting it, it's not going to feel very good. And you know, I'm one of those people too.
I think the process varies though, because there's some factors here. So I'm going to use you and me as just two hypothetical people. I feel you don't value me. I feel that whatever it is I do that you and I interact on, you don't think it's good. And that may or may not be accurate, but that's how I feel.
Okay.
But then there's some follow-up things. Do I feel that whatever it is that we interact on, I bring value to it? Because if I think you don't think I have value in whatever area our lives intersect, and I agree with you, then the problem is not they don't think I have value. It's I appear to not have value in this situation. I should work for ways to redress that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I do feel I have value and I feel that you don't think I have value, then it really gets into the nature of our relationship, because there are plenty of people out there who might not value something about me that intersects with their life that it's like, fine, you don't need to. I don't care. I know it has value. But then there are definitely people in your life, in one's life, where if we make it slightly less hypothetical, you are a close friend of mine with whom we make a podcast. If I felt you thought I had no value in our friendship and in this podcast, I would need to say, William, I need you to express appreciation more. I feel you are taking me for granted. I feel you don't appreciate me enough. And that's a thing we would need to talk about if we were going to remain friends. So it's kind of a deal. Does your coworker, whose job is largely independent of yours in terms of what you do at work, not value your shit? In which case, kind of who cares? I mean, maybe they're just a dick or whatever. Or is it your spouse, in which case it's very important? And like, yeah, and that's something you do need to deal with.
It can get complicated because you know, obvious. So if you're a person like me, you end up in a situation where you're constantly trying to add value to situations and it constantly seems to not work. And you're pretty sure that the people you're interacting with don't value what you're doing, but you don't blame them. I mean, that, because if what you're doing isn't valuable, that's not valuable. So then you have to think of something else to do. And so you're just constantly trying and trying and trying to do something valuable, constantly feeling like you're failing, and you don't know what to do except just to keep
trying. See, I said you work to redress, to mitigate the lack of value that you perceive and that you perceive they perceive. I think there becomes an order of operations issue here. If you see no value in what you're doing and you think others see no value in it, the first thing you got to do is find a way so you see value in it. That to me is more important than dealing with whatever perceptions you have of other people. I mean, if you're doing something and you don't think there's value in it, and you don't think I think there's value in it, both of those are a problem. But,
well, that's not,
I your mean, own self-value, I think, is more important.
I see value in it. I see value in it until the other person doesn't see value in it. And then I no longer see value in it.
Yeah. And I think that's a slightly different problem. Because you should not be, we're saying value so much, the word is just losing its meaning here, but you should not, I'm getting a little too judgmental here. I don't think it is healthy to base your perception of value on, about something involving yourself, on an outside perspective of value. Or even worse in this case, your perception of an outside perspective on that.
I mean, yeah, you're right. That's true. Yeah, I agree that it's
fine
not
to say this person seems to think what I do isn't worth shit. Maybe I should stop and reevaluate. Yeah. Because you know what? Sometimes I'm wrong. Not often, but sometimes I'm wrong. So if my wife thinks that's not worth shit, I maybe should stop and be like, is it? Let me think. But I don't think I'd be like, oh, I think my wife thinks this is dumb, so it must be dumb. No. Not so good.
Yeah.
But we run into a funny one here, Trish and I, actually. So I, because for all their other sins or whatever, my parents have always been incredibly supportive and incredibly appreciative. And let me know how much I was raised in such a way that I am very big. I hope you will agree with this. I hope you've seen this. I am very big on expressing positive feedback and appreciation for those in my life and for encounter randomly.
I think that's true. I mean, I think that's been evidenced in the podcast even.
I hope so. Yeah. I definitely put energy into it. How good the output is, I don't know, but I put a lot of energy into it, and I consider it very important.
Yeah.
Trish does not. Mm. I don't know that it's like, I'm not saying like consciously. I'm not saying like Trish is like, no, I don't have to tell you you're good. Like, not that. Trish was raised in a way that wasn't as demonstrative.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is not as demonstrative. And I struggle with that. And what I've had to learn is quantity does not equal quality. She does, like, it took years into our relationship before I was like, I am confident that Trish really loves me.
Mm.
All the while trying to work myself to make sure I express that love and didn't feel like I was getting the same thing back. But that's because it doesn't mean. And in fact, a lot of times my appreciation, I think, doesn't hold as much weight for, like, she doesn't consider it as important necessarily. I think when I'm constantly, you know, protestations of love and things like this, I mean, I'm confident she thinks I love her, but I don't. I sometimes think like she thinks you could pump the brakes a little bit on how often you got to say that or whatever. And it's an in-between thing. She's much more demonstrative than she was because she knows my needs and so forth. But I've also had to learn, just because I'm like, oh, we got to do this to show how much I love, she does other things. And don't also the absence of a thing doesn't mean the absence of the love or the appreciation.
Right. But I mean, in popular culture, there's that these days they call that someone's love language. Like the person's
I almost said that because I do think that is a useful term for these conversations. Mm-hmm. I don't want to read too much into it, but people express love in different ways.
Yeah.
All the time. Not just one way all the time.
Yeah, like I mean,
I think and
sometimes
and we need to learn to read the different languages. Ugh. Yeah, it doesn't feel good, but it's a useful term.
When you talk about Trish's upbringing, it's very similar to mine, it seems. And
rural Midwestern. So
yeah, in the world I grew up in, it was open expressions of a lot of things, romantic love, familial love was almost like, there was almost a sense, not entirely, but there was almost a sense, if you have to say it, then it's not real kind of thing.
Well, that words are only words.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas I'm always like, words are all I fucking have. Inside here, hollow shell. I just have words.
Yeah. So, so definitely I grew up in an environment where people were expressing affection and love all the time, just maybe not verbally, like, you know, through something being said. It was something they did that they didn't have to do.
Or
they did it a certain way.
Didn't do.
Right.
Because that's the thing I've had to learn from Trish. We'd have discussions and I'm like, I feel like you didn't appreciate it. She's like, of course I did, because I didn't, you know, complain about this, or I let you do this thing that I wouldn't have if I hadn't loved you, and things like that. Yeah. But of course, none of that is external, so I don't know about any of it. Whereas meanwhile, she's very consciously, very actively doing all sorts of things or avoiding certain things out of respect and appreciation and love for me. But it's all in her mind. So as far as I know, she's doing nothing. And that's, yeah, there is some of that too. I have to trust her to a certain degree as well, but she has learned. And like I said, just the other day, we're doing a whole, you remember last year when we did the thing where we bought presents for a needy family?
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the only fun thing about the holidays. Well, this year we're doing two families. Oh, and nice. It's a whole deal, and we have gotten more Amazon packages in the last week than we've probably gotten ever before. And so things are a disaster in our house right now. But she just texted me the other day and she's like, I really appreciate how you've been keeping the house clean. This all would have been so much worse if the house had been the way it used to. And I was
that's
like,
nice.
Oh,
that's nice.
And she says that because she knows that I need that and that it's important. So we, as with so many things, where she and I differ in how we were raised, we've learned to sort of meet in the middle. But yeah, part of that is me learning that she doesn't express things the way I do. She expresses them differently, and that's important. I don't think I particularly suffer from what you're talking about, except see if this is the thing. I have this thing. And I noticed it a lot in college because I had it with a lot of college professors, where really early on, because I'm people don't forget me. I, for good or for bad, people always remember me. There's a lot of physicality. I talk a lot. So everywhere I go, people remember. And sometimes they remember me poorly. Sometimes they remember me well. But so all of my college professors knew right away. Regardless of the class size, like within days, they're like, that guy, you know, they know because I talk a lot, whatever. And a lot of them, I would be like, I think they really like me. They're being like, I think we've got a thing here. Like, we're this is they especially like me. And then I would always be like, you're making that up, right? That's probably not. And I have no idea what the reality was. But so does that count? Where I automatically, I presume that people value me highly. And then I check myself and say, that's probably not true.
I don't know. Maybe I mean, I've had professors who I have met at least one time and sometimes twice. And the subsequent times they didn't remember me.
I don't think that's uncommon. And I think it's expect, like, they go through a lot of kids, you know, they go through a lot.
Well, I know, but I mean, I didn't just sit in the class and say nothing. I mean, I attended their office hours. I mean, I talked to them, you know, fairly a lot, and they didn't remember me like once and sometimes twice. I'll be honest.
It was about 4 years into this podcast before I remembered who you were every time.
But I mean, none of the times I became reacquainted with them, did I expect them to remember me either, but they didn't. I don't think I'm like you. I don't think I'm memorable at all, even if I do a lot of talking and everything else.
Trish has had to learn to live with it because we go places together and people remember us because they remember me. Some of it is also I'm a loud, giant dude who wears dresses and cat hoodies and stuff. So that's some of it too. And I'm also never not trying to make a joke. So these things stand out to people. Like what you are describing is involved, but it's still sort of normal. Like you went to your professor's office hours. Did you ever go to your professor's office hours to request a paper extension because you were in over your head because you were dating three women at the same time and it had all gone to shit?
No,
probably not.
No,
but my professors remember me because I did that. Or you've talked to professors probably when you had to miss a class. But did you ever go to them and say, I am sorry, I missed the class. I got literally accidentally drunk.
I never had to talk to a professor because I was missing a class. So
you've never. Oh, wow.
I went to office hours for different reasons. I wanted to talk about.
Oh, so did I sometimes. But
I wanted to. I mean, I wasn't having an issue or a problem. I was in office hours to get clarification on an assignment or to make sure that the paper I was writing was going in the right direction, things like that.
Normal shit.
Yeah.
It was never... Not this guy. I take up a lot of space, socially speaking. I always have. I occasionally try, and I get this from my father too, try not to. But there's never a sweet spot. It's always I'm the biggest one in the room, or I stand in the doorway and say absolutely nothing. Like I don't have a middle ground where I'm just like involved. But I assume because you haven't said it, there is not an official term for this because you would know. Unless next semester is when they're going to teach you about this one.
I mean, until Azure Talon brought it up, I hadn't really thought about it like that. And I've never heard of anything like that. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't a word for it, of course.
I might actually ask my therapist. I have therapy next week. I might ask my therapist if they've heard of it.
I would think there would be a term for it because I think I would be really surprised. I mean, again, I never really thought about it until Azure Talon brought it up. But now that he has brought it up, it seems like a pretty obvious thing that people would deal with. Certainly, I feel like I deal with it where you just don't feel like whatever you do is having an impact on the world or that anybody values it. I don't know if there's not a word for it, there's probably someone who talks about it or has... You know, some kind of model,
and I think we can agree it's not uncommon.
I don't know. Maybe I suppose not.
I would be shocked if it was. Like when you read the email, I wasn't like, "Whoa, that's a weird thing." I was like, "No, that's
well, yeah, no, I guess I didn't think that either."
I think a lot of people have it, and yeah, This is a lot I've been getting out of therapy lately. I always want to ID things. And I've been trying more and more to do less of that and do more of what am I going to do about it? What makes this problem more the way I want it to be rather than what is this problem? And sometimes you can't do the former until you do the latter. But a lot of times you can. And we've talked about this on here before. The don't worry so much about the diagnosis as the therapy, as where you go forward from there. But Azure Talon's asking about a diagnosis or a specific term, because this is a goofy fucking podcast and not actual therapy. So I should probably stop trying to.
I mean, one thing that you do get in like diagnostic situations for depression is a person will feel like they're a burden to other people.
Yeah.
And that might be the other side of this coin where you don't feel like you're contributing anything. You don't feel like your contribution is valued. And I mean, kind of logically, that suggests that you feel like you're only taking in life and not giving anything. And
potentially I think that's a distinction there,
yeah.
Of I feel you don't value my contribution versus I feel my contribution is not of value, because the one doesn't necessarily go with the other.
Well, like, I mean, for me, for example, I don't just experience not feeling like my contribution is valued, but I value the other person's contribution, right? So I don't just sense that I'm not contributing anything. I sense that everybody else is.
And yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Just I'm not. And so that adds a dimension of I don't know, bad, I guess. And that yes, burden.
But what I'm saying is it's not necessarily I feel you don't think I'm contributing anything does not necessarily go cheek by jowl with I feel that I'm not contributing.
Yeah.
You said right. It often happens for you, but I think there are plenty of situations for people where that's not the case. Sometimes sure, I absolutely feel I'm contributing. I just think you don't think so. And right, that's right. A problem.
Right. Yeah. And I rarely feel that way because obviously if I'm putting something out in the world, I think it's valuable or I wouldn't put it out there. But if nobody responds to it, then I also don't think it's valuable after that point. I thought it was valuable when I put it out there, obviously, or I wouldn't have done it. But nobody else sees it as valuable, well, then it's not. So.
But what if it's just one person? What if a bunch of people do find it valuable, but one person who is close to you or something seems not to? That's a different thing.
I mean, I guess. I usually am okay if just one person thinks it's valuable. Like, if just one person, great. That's better than none.
But that's not the issue Azure Talon's discussing here. At least it doesn't seem to be.
Right.
You write things.
Sure.
Some people like those things.
Mm-hmm. Some people do.
And you like those things, let's say.
Yeah, I like them. Sure.
You think I don't.
Okay.
That's an issue. If you genuinely thought, I personally thought all your writing was shit, that would be an issue between. I do not believe you would be like, oh, different opinions. Let's move on and continue to be very close friends. And this will in no way be an obstacle in our relationship.
I mean, it depends, I guess. I mean, trying to think about that.
But there's also a version of this where you think your writing is good, or at least some of it's good or whatever. And a lot of other people like it as well. You think I know the most about quality of writing. and you think that I think it's shit. And that can also be a thing.
Well, okay, so that, let's say it was that situation. Let's say I believe that you had a better bead on this than I have or than any of these other people have.
Yeah,
naturally I would think, well,
then
I
you're like, there all must the rest be a problem. Of us
are wrong.
Yeah.
But if I liked it and all these people liked it and you didn't like it, I think I could be fine with that. I was like, well, if he has a different opinion, that's fine.
I mean, I agree you could be fine with it in terms of how you feel about your writing. You don't think that would complicate our relationship?
Tony, I have made so much stuff that people who are my friends and family have told me they don't like. I would have nobody in my life if I was like, well, I can't be your friend anymore.
I mean, that just tells me that this was a bad example to use. Are you getting the concept I'm trying to get at? It's not actually about your writing, William.
No. I know. I'm just saying I don't. Well, maybe I don't get the concept because I'm saying
if there is something that you believe has value and lots of other people, or at least some other people, also believe it has value, but one person who you are very close to believes it has no value, right, isn't that going to present an obstacle or difficulty that needs to be dealt with within your relationship?
I don't see how. I mean, if it's about, like you were just saying, it's about personal taste or whatever. I mean, they don't like it. Okay. I mean, people don't like, we don't all like the same things. That's fine.
So if I think you're a good husband and you think you're a good husband and most of your friends think you're a good husband and Abby doesn't think you're a good husband.
Yes, but that's different because I'm her husband.
All right. How about friends? What if I think you're a bad friend to me?
Well, that's different because now you're talking about the actual relationship itself, not something I've written or something I've built.
This is... Yeah, okay. So then what?
What do I not get? I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be dense. I just don't know.
I am saying that sometimes the perception that somebody else doesn't appreciate something about you is actually about them. Sometimes the answer really is you don't appreciate me and you are unfairly deriding or not showing, like, if you can't if you thought I was a bad friend to you and I thought I was a good friend and other people thought I was a good friend to you. Yeah. But you thought I was a bad friend. You're like, I'm willing to hang out, but I think you're kind of a shitty friend. I'd be like, this is a problem we have.
Yeah, the problem
appears to be that you don't appreciate how good friend I am.
Okay, I get it. Sure.
That's what I'm saying is the perception that other people don't like you may have to do with your perception of what you think they feel.
Yeah.
It may have to do with you actually being a sort of person that they shouldn't like because you're being shitty or whatever, or it may be that they don't properly appreciate you. And that last one's not, I mean, it still is your problem, but it's on them.
It's hard for me to think.
This situation can manifest in a variety of ways, not all of which have to do with your psyche. That's what I'm saying.
I know. But that last one, that's not easy for me to, it's not easy for me to come.
Well, and I don't, you, I am willing to believe that you believe that literally never has and never will happen in your life. Again, you are William. I just want to talk about the fact that for most people, that is something to consider. When you feel that somebody doesn't like you, it's possible that that's because they actually don't like you. And if that's the case, it's possible that it's their fucking problem and not yours.
I mean, I've been in those situations before. And usually, though, it took a long time for me to resolve, like longer than it should have taken.
Because you think everything ever is your fault.
I mean, I think I do have that problem. Yeah.
Yes. Which is a thing to work with, and that's fine. And I don't want to judge it. But you do understand that not everybody's like that. And in fact, most people don't think everything is their fault.
I mean, I suppose that's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the problem, maybe this is a thing. I should have used Jeffrey and Sven. Because when I'm talking about you, you're like, well, me. And I'm like, yeah, but you're you. We're talking about a broader concept. I understand that's how it works for you.
Yeah.
But I hope that you understand that's not always, like, for a lot of people, maybe even most people, that's not how it necessarily operates. And I think it is important. Now, to be fair, I also think this conversation has taught me the important thing that this is knowledge that you really need to focus on. Because however you feel, I promise you, there are times where people don't like you or value you, and it is absolutely their problem, not yours.
Mm.
And I understand that that is something that you struggle with, but all the more reason it's something you need to work on. Because just by sheer statistics, it has to be true. But as somebody who literally knows you and have known things you have done and have known people who have reacted poorly, some of the times it was their fault.
Mm. I mean,
it's an important lesson. I have really taken to heart this idea where I am providing therapy to you and Azure Talent and the entire listening audience today. I don't know where I got the sheer gall, but that is 100% how I'm approaching this. Azure Talent wrote in a thing saying, here's a weird concept. Is there a clinical name for it? And what I have done is made this a group therapy session for you and everyone listening. I hope you all find value in that. But if you don't, I think this is one of those issues where it is my problem. And that's fair. And I don't even feel bad about that idea, because I'm like, honestly, it would be wild if there was value in what I'm saying. It would be frankly insane if somebody's listening to this podcast and they're like, Tony's got it right. Nobody's ever explained this to me, but yeah, thanks. Nope. Nope. Precisely zero education. I've never taken a psych class.
Mm.
Not a one.
Mm.
I'm pretty confident I know that there's brains, like, in what they look like. That's about it. So, we love to end the episode on a disclaimer. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But it's a tightrope to walk. Balancing external judgment, for lack of a better term, and personal judgment.
Mm.
And you should never just assume one or the other is right.
No, you're right about that.
Somebody, you feeling a way about something and somebody else feeling a different way about it, you need more information before you can determine who is right there. And that includes when the thing people are feeling about is you and your value and your contribution. That's what I'm trying to get out there. So feeling that people don't like you may or may not mean that they don't like you, but regardless, it doesn't necessarily mean they're right or that they're wrong. We all have the capability to be shitty at things.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
Reach deep inside and you will find you can be bad at stuff.
Won't you?
And I would like to give a small apology for getting a little carried away, as I am wont to do. But I feel like in this instance, it's very much some displacement stuff. I'm processing a lot. It, again, the time of year is getting me. And so I'm going through a lot of shit in my head, and I feel like I may have turned this into a therapy session for me. So also, even for me, I'm doing a lot of hand gestures. All right. Also, we are getting dangerously close to 2 hours on this recording. So
wow. I wonder if people listen to the whole thing when we do that.
Go. Tune in next week. It probably won't be like this. I don't know. It would be fun if that's what the show pivoted into. Eventually, we became like a Dr. Drew thing. That would be hilarious.
Sure.
That would be a step towards my dream job of leading a cult.
Oh,
that would be a good step in that direction. So,
sure, it would.
Your dream. If y'all want to email us with, I don't even want to say your mental health issues, but references to mental health issues, I'd be happy to turn that into a therapy session. Clearly, and William will be the stand-in for you. This week, the part of Azure Talon was played by William.
I hope I did okay.
That's only going to work, though, if you do different voices for each one.
Oh.
You got to do the voices.
I'll have to work on that.
I love that phrase. You got to do the voices. Because we all know what it means. It's a child having you read them a story. We know what that, like, it's a weirdly universal thing in English-speaking society of kids being like, if you watch a movie or something and somebody's reading them a story and they're like, you have to do the voices. We all know exactly what that means. Even though, like, syntactically, that's a ridiculous sentence. And I don't know where we get it from. And no child ever seems to phrase it differently. No child is ever like, you have to do a different voice for each character or something like that. I started to use the word effect, and I'm like, yeah, no child ever uses the word effect with an A to describe their bedtime stories. Yeah. I mean, I am on one. All right, let's wrap it up here. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. I mean, just rip me a new one. I feel like I have just overstepped the bounds of propriety, and I have destroyed a lot of social contracts here today. Again, don't feel particularly bad about it, which is probably also bad, but whatever.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I think it was fine.
And that's the best part. But no, go and tell us your thoughts on it. I also find this fascinating. I think this is very interesting. And William and I are mental health geeks. How do we explain?
I always say
William and I get off on doing amateur therapy, but that is unwholesome. I think we're mental health. Like, we love talking about this shit for fun. Yeah, and when I spell, every time I spell it out, I'm like, what kind of psychos are we? But we do. And we're not the only ones. I have other friends that are like this too. But so let's fucking get into it. I mean, if you go to the blog, bear your mental health issues for us right there. And we promise we won't judge, but we also might be lying. By which I mean me, William, definitely won't judge. I'm horrible. I might. But also take on what I said, whatever. I think the first half hour of the podcast was about something else. You could also talk about that. We want your feedback. We crave your input. We are not a lecture series. I mean, we absolutely are, but we also don't want to. I mean, William can correct me if he doesn't feel this way, but the interactivity of this podcast is such a huge component of it to me.
Oh, I agree with that, yeah.
And as we all know, I get very sad and depressed and feel that I'm not properly valued when y'all don't interact. So go do it. All two of you still listening. And tune in next week. I'll go to aethertheater.com and look at all the William shit. Go to smashwords.com and pick up my book Odd Wings, which may very soon here be going on sale again if the $3 price tag is what's been holding you back, I might have a solution for that very soon, but we'll see. And otherwise, yeah, just tune in next week. All right. Once we get off the air here, we can talk about what's really your problem.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.